So this morning I want to talk about two aspects of the spiritual path, and in particular how they relate to the breath. And as many of you know, the breath is central to most spiritual work, whether it's in the simple meditation practice of watching the breath, or of doing a zikr or mantra on the breath. The breath belongs to the esoteric core of much spiritual work. And I just quote from our Sufi tradition, my Sufi tradition, Bahauddin, who is the founder of the Naqshbandi Sufi order to which I belong. He said, "The foundation of our work is upon the breath. The more one is able to be conscious of one's breathing, the stronger is one's inner life. And of particular importance is the moment between inhalation and exhalation, and between exhalation and inhalation." And exactly the same teaching is represented in a Zen practice of centering that says, "What is your reality? This experience may dawn between two breaths. As breath turns from down to up, and again as breath curves from up to down, through both of these turns, realize." And what I want to talk about in particular are the two cycles of the breath, or two halves of the cycles of the breath, and how they work together. And there is the in-breath. Now, esoterically, the in-breath is when one returns to the plane of the soul, one returns to the plane of the self. This is why, for example, in most instances, the last breath of a dying person is an in-breath. They go back to the self, back to the soul, and don't come back. In fact, with every breath you take, every in-breath, you go back to your real self. You go back to the soul. Otherwise, you couldn't exist. Without that continual connection with who you really are, you could not exist in this world of appearances. And there is this beautiful moment, if you watch your breath, at the end of every in-breath, there is this moment of bliss, which is the bliss of the soul. It's called Anandamaya Kosha, the bliss which is the sheath of the soul. So with every moment, every breath, you go back to the self. And then this is played out in the spiritual journey. This is the journey that most people associate with spiritual life. The journey that takes you back to who you are. This is the uncovering of the layers of the onion. And whether it is done in the Sufi path, through the pain of longing, through this pain of the heart, separation from God, or whether it's done through conscious awareness, practice, it doesn't matter. It is the same journey. It is the same journey away from appearances, away from the personality, away from the ego, into this other dimension of what is real. Who you really are. And part of spiritual work is to claim this, to discover this and to claim this. And then to live this. So much of the focus of the path, as it has been presented to us, is this process of uncovering. The Sufis talk about tearing away the veils of separation. And it is a journey back to yourself. And strangely, this journey often begins with an awakening. The Sufis say the end is present at the beginning. and it is given as a moment of awakening in which the energy of the self, the energy of who you are, pierces through all of the veils, all of the coverings that separate you from yourself. And you are given this glimpse. I had it myself very directly when I was 16 and I read this Zen koan. The wild geese do not intend to cast their reflection. The water has no mind to receive their image. I read this koan and suddenly the whole world for me changed. Suddenly I was in a different place. I was in the same place, but it was completely different. And I saw life as incredibly full of joy, incredibly full of light. It was just dancing. It was alive. It was fully, fully alive. It lasted for about 2 weeks. And then the veils came back. Then the personality covered it over. Then the conditioning covered it over. And then the journey began. The journey of the soul back to its source. The journey of reclaiming what is essentially yours, who you are. And then it happens gradually, slowly. It is not a linear progression. It is a dance. It is a relationship of yourself to yourself. It is an uncovering of yourself. And you work upon yourself, you do the practices of the path, whatever path you are attracted to. You confront your darkness. My teacher, Mrs. Tweedy, she said when she went to India, she said she hoped for instructions in yoga. She expected spiritual teachings, but what the teacher did was force her to confront the darkness within herself. And this is when you are face to face with your own darkness, with everything that separates you from what you really are. And then you begin to discover, the veils begin to lift, and you begin to discover this luminous center of your own nature. What is said to be the face you had before you were born. What you really, really are. And this self or soul, it has other qualities. It has a quality of peace. This is the very innermost nature of the self, this peace. To quote Ramana Maharshi, we are always peace. To get rid of the idea that we are not peace is all that is required. This is the peace that belongs to the soul. This is not a peace that has anything to do with resolving conflicts. It just is pure peace. You are given it. It is your own nature. And it can come upon you just in states where there is just peace. Everywhere there is peace. And again, like most spiritual states, first you get a glimpse, first you get a taste, and then it comes back, maybe just for a day or for a week, you are just in a state of peace. What does that mean? It means you are near to yourself, because your real self is peace. The nature of your real self is peace. This is, of course, also the gift of a great teacher to his disciples. This was the gift that Christ left to his disciples. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. And eventually it is there, always beneath the surface. You can just go there, you can just be in the peace. It is part of the nature of the self. It is part of the nature of the real human being. The self is also a state of being, which is why it is said Sufism is a state of being. It isn't about doing anything, it is about being. And for many people, this is one of the first experiences they have of the self. Just a state of being. You just are. You don't have to do anything about it. You just sense this state of being. It's one of the first experiences of samadhi, of higher consciousness in meditation for many people. Just a state of being. Another aspect of the self is its infinite nature, larger than large and smaller than small. And many people are given glimpses of this. You suddenly look at a night sky and you are the night sky. You are this infinite horizon. Very simple. Spiritual states are very, very simple and very, very ordinary. They just are. Because that is what we are. We just are. And as I mentioned before, bliss is another quality of the self. It's actually the covering of the self, this bliss. They say that the bliss of sexual intercourse is the one experience of the self that is given to humanity as a whole for the sake of procreation. Sexual orgasm is an experience on the plane of the self, which is why in that moment there are not two people. And often you are not there either. There is no ego, there is just the experience. So that is another quality of the self, quality of who you are, that you uncover on your way home. You discover this within you. And another very, very important quality of the self is oneness. The self is a state of unity. You are a state of unity. You are one. When you discover that inside of yourself, you discover you are one with yourself and you are one with everything. It's a very, very common experience. You are one with everything. Everything is connected together. Everything is part of the whole and you are the whole. The individual self is the universal self. You are the whole of life. You are part of the whole of life. You are not separate. So these are the experiences that belong to you. These are the qualities that are your real nature. And this is what you uncover on the in-breath, on the journey back to God. And you uncover them gradually, and sometimes it is this mischievous dance as these qualities appear and disappear. Sometimes they are there, and it is so easy. And then they disappear and you have to work hard for weeks, for months, and suddenly they appear when you least expect them. And initially you get glimpses of them. They are yours, they are your real nature, and you get given them. Not through your own effort, it is always a gift you get given them. You have to work hard on yourself, yes, you have to look at who you really are, you have to discover the difference between your personality and your real nature. You have to be prepared to be vulnerable, be prepared to be open, be prepared to be wrong. But slowly you begin to discover under the surface these essential qualities. And then what had been a glimpse, what had been a moment in and out of time becomes a lasting state of presence. You begin to rest in this state. In Sufism it is called Baqa, abiding in God. You no longer have to play hide and seek with yourself. You just are yourself. It is what T.S. Eliot calls a condition of complete simplicity costing not less than everything. And I'd just like to read you a beautiful description of this from the Sufi classic, The Conference of the Birds, which is the best story of the journey told in classical Sufism, in which 100 or more birds set out on the journey, and after all the trials and tribulations and all the valleys of the quest, 30 remain. And they set out to seek the Simurgh, which is the mystical bird of truth, and the mystic Simurgh also means 30. So of course, at the end of the endless journey, they discover themselves. And I just read you this beautiful description of this. Their souls rose free of all they'd been before. The past and all its actions were no more. Their life came from that close, insistent sun, and in its vivid rays they shone as one. There in the Simurgh's radiant face they saw themselves. The Simurgh of the world, with awe they gazed, and dared at last to comprehend they were the Simurgh and the journey's end. They see the Simurgh, at themselves they stare, and see a second Simurgh standing there. They look at both and see the two are one, that this is that, that this, the goal is one. They ask, but inwardly they make no sound, the meaning of these mysteries that confound their puzzled ignorance. How is it true that we is not distinguished here from you? And silently their shining Lord replies, I am a mirror set before your eyes. All who come before my splendor see themselves, their own unique reality. You came as 30 birds and therefore saw these selfsame 30 birds, not less nor more. If you had come as 50, 50 here, an answering 40, 50 would appear. Though you have struggled, wandered, traveled far, it is yourselves you see and what you are. And this you all know, at the end of the journey, you discover yourself. I was shown that once in a group of children when I was 22. There were these children walking on their way to school. And suddenly the veils were lifted and I was shown these ordinary school children, what they really were. And where the heart is, there was this incredible radiant sun, full of blinding light. That's what we are. That's our real nature. That is what you discover on the journey. That's what makes it all worthwhile. This journey back to the source, back to yourself, back to your own essential nature. You see in the mirror this radiant sun, which is yourself, which is a simple state of being, which is the most ordinary natural self. And it is a state of oneness with life. It is a state of unity. Of course, that is not the end of the journey, and if you are a mystic, you go beyond there into the uncreated worlds. What one mystic called the dark silence in which all lovers lose themselves. You go beyond the self into the emptiness, into the darkness. This is what Thomas Merton describes. Desert and void, the uncreated is waste and emptiness to the creature. Not even sand, not even stone, not even darkness and night. A burning wilderness would at least be something. It burns and is wild, but the uncreated is no something. Waste, emptiness, total poverty of the creator, yet from this poverty springs everything. The waste is inexhaustible, infinite zero. Everything comes from this desolate nothing. Everything wants to return to it and cannot, for who can return nowhere? But for each of us, there is a point of nowhereness in the middle of movement, a point of nothingness in the midst of being, the incomparable point not to be discovered by insight. If you seek it, you do not find it. If you stop seeking, it is there. But you must not turn to it. Once you become aware of yourself as seeker, you are lost. But if you are content to be lost, you will be found without knowing it, precisely because you are lost, for you are at last nowhere. So that is, not everybody is drawn further. For many people, the self is the resting place, is the end of the journey. But I'm just saying this journey does go on. Some mystics are drawn into the uncreated, into the darkness, into the void. And at the beginning, there is a consciousness of the void. The self is conscious of the emptiness, of the nothingness. And then even that consciousness goes as the darkness absorbs even the light of the self. And there is nothing, there is no consciousness. One comes back from those states only knowing one has been taken, one has been absorbed. And then, friends, that is not even the end of the journey, because even further than the uncreated worlds, even further than the states of non-being, is what we can call, for the sake of convenience, ultimate reality, absolute reality, which is completely, completely, completely other, completely different, which destroys everything you ever thought, in which there is, it is just so other, there can be no attempt to describe it. So that is the journey in a nutshell, in 20 minutes. From who you think you are, to what you really are, to the center of self, and then to those further horizons. That is the in-breath. That is actually what happens in every breath you take. You go back to the self, back to the source. But this is only half of the story. There is the out-breath. And in the out-breath, the reality of the self comes into this world. And without the reality of the self coming into this world would not be sustained. This world is an expression of the absolute, just as you are an expression of yourself. The ego is actually a manifestation in this world of the self. Of course, at the beginning, the ego thinks it's the self. It's the main player on the stage. And part of the journey is to discover, no, it's not the main player on the stage. It's just a very, very minor actor. It's just a figure in a dream. But the energy of from the inner, from the self, from the real, pours into creation, pours into your life, sustaining you, sustaining the world. And what I really want to talk about is how we can consciously participate in this. How we can consciously participate in bringing the energy of the what is real, of one's real nature, into one's life, into the world, so it doesn't just sustain it, but also helps to transform it. Because this is what happens to you. The energy of your real self changes and transforms you. And the moment you turn towards the self, the moment you look towards who you really are, this process is amplified 10,000 times. Your consciousness participates in bringing the energy of the self into your life, in sustaining yourself and your environment with what is real. Most people create a fabricated life just through the illusions of the ego. You know that. Otherwise you wouldn't be here. You'd be off, like outside, playing golf. Continuing this dream, continuing the illusion, running after your desires in the 10,000 malls and whatever that America has to offer, the weapons of mass destruction. You would be playing and playing and playing. So somewhere you want to participate, or something in you wants to participate in this bigger drama of life, which is the drama of what is real, what is really happening at this moment of time, and how can you participate in it? How can you bring the energy of your own revelation, of your own self, of what is real, into your own environment and into the world? Now, traditionally, only the guys, and there weren't many women in those days, who had made the journey right back home got to play this part. This is, for example, in those wonderful Zen ox herding pictures. You go on the inner journey, you go to the empty circle, you go to the source, then when you're really old and a bit fat, you come back into the world with your, you know, there's this lovely, lovely quotation. Barefoot and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust-laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now before me, the dead trees become alive. This is the traditional model of the individual who has realized their nature themselves, who knows who they are, who lives from that place, who is abiding in themselves, coming back into life. And transforming life around him or her. Before me, the dead trees become alive. And the other model we have of real transformation is just through your own inner process, just through working on yourself, just through clearing away the debris around you in yourself, you make a very real contribution to life. And this is totally correct. Through sweeping your own doorstep, you clean part of the world. And those are the two models that we have. If you're not going to get into a whole ego trip. And I say traditionally, you had to wait until you'd been through the whole process of the inner journey, until you'd in-breathed the whole thing, till you could come back into life from that place of realization, from that place of knowing who you are. And you came back down the mountain, because the journey had taken you far up the mountain. And then you came back into life. But there is a need at this moment in time for spiritual work to be done by those who have not just, who have not completed the journey, because it takes a long time. The real journey, I'm not talking just a glimpse of yourself, you're given that all along, but the real journey until you are completely resting in yourself, absorbed in yourself. Unless you are a remarkable person, we're talking 20, 40 years. And the world is crying out for the energy of what is real. The world has become so covered in illusions, in an illusion that separates it from its own natural self. That it is starving, it is dying. Meaning is falling away. This cloud of forgetfulness, because in the Sufism we talk a lot about forgetfulness, forgetting who we are, forgetting our divine nature, forgetting God. It has become covered in this cloud of forgetfulness and mass marketed to such a degree that it is starving from nourishment. It is dying. And sadly, although many people are aware that the ecological state of the world, they don't glimpse behind that the sources of life are drying up in the inner worlds. You see, it is a spiritual truth that everything in the outer is nourished from the inner. Everything in the outer is a reflection of the inner, which is why you turn within yourself to discover what is real. And the ecological crisis in the outer world is just a reflection, a manifestation of a world that is starved of what is real. Just as your own life can dry up when you become starved from who you really are. The meaning goes. And you may rush after outer attractions, but there is no meaning.